and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. Glad you're joining us today. And it's me and Rachel back again. You know, we've been doing podcasts together, have we, Rachel?
Woohoo! Yeah, we've been doing separate interviews and
We've done some solos. We've done some interviews. We ain't been getting together too much for podcasts here lately. I'm sure that'll really change as the weather gets colder and the homestead life kind of slows down a little bit. But for now, that's just the way it is. And we're getting lots of interview requests and stuff. So that's fun. I like talking to other folks. You like talking to other folks. So learning lots of things. Fun. Yeah. But we're going to talk today about apple harvesting, processing, and preserving. And that's kind of been your life lately, right?
It has. And I've only got 3 trees here in the yard. And then I planted 12 more. So in a couple of years, it's really going to be my life.
Yeah, you're doing a lot more of that than him. I make a couple things and I take what I get and a lot goes to waste. But, you know, I don't do with my apples probably as good as I should. And I have 3 apple trees also. 2 of them don't produce real well because they're still pretty young. And the 1 does really well, though. But mine are also all smaller. You have an old tree on your property, don't you?
Yeah, like I kind of have one. The same thing. I have 2 dwarfs, which put out about a bushel. They've been battling some disease. So they don't put out as much. And then I have my old one that we don't even know what it is. But that thing, 7 bushels, probably.
Wow.
It's just crazy how much apples that thing produces.
Well, before we jump into all the apple talk, I guess we should talk about what we've been doing on our homesteads. How about you? Other than apples, I guess you've been doing apples.
Apples.
You've been doing apples.
More tomatoes. We have had a really unseasonably warm spell. Like it's still warm here. It was 85, I believe. What's today? Today is Thursday. Tuesday. It was 85 degrees and we broke records. It was just crazy. And so I still have tomatoes and peppers in my garden. And actually, I don't have them in my garden. I pulled the tomatoes and I've got every flat surface in the kitchen has tomato on it. And so slowly as they've been ripening, I've been doing things with them, drying them and canning them and just eating them. And then, but I didn't pull the peppers because I have this one pepper plant that produced these peppers that are really good flavor. And it's just loaded full of like 6 peppers that are just sitting there staying green. But they're supposed to turn red and it's taking forever. So thankfully it's been warm enough for them to keep going, but I really wanted to get those red peppers.
You haven't had a frost up there yet.
No, isn't that? That is.
Yeah. Cause you usually have one by now, don't you? Yeah,
we do. So it's crazy because in August, the end of August, we were colder in the end of August than we are now. And the end of August, we had a town in Michigan, which isn't terribly far from us, get 31 degrees and have a frost, which was a record for, I think, for them. And so I kept thinking, we're going to get early frost this year. We're going to get, because we kept getting these really cold nights down into the low 30s and we never did get a frost. And here we are, October, and we're late for our frost, first frost. Mm. Yeah.
Peppers are enjoying it. Hopefully you'll get some before it happens.
I hope so. I don't know. I keep thinking, and now I'm tempted to dig that plant up because I really, really like it. But it
last year that didn't work out though, did it?
No, it didn't. But this was one that I bought at the store, so it's a hybrid, so I couldn't save seeds from it. But I'm tempted to try it again.
Yeah.
I really like it. It was a really thick-walled, sweet red pepper. Just really good.
Yeah, sometimes you just get you'll get one that you just love and then you can't ever seem like get that back on your property. If it's a hybrid, especially, you just can't seem to work it out again. I've had a couple like that. I've had some tomatoes like that too, like some hybrid tomatoes. And I can't remember what they were. And I've tried a few different ones and they were just so, so good. I remember they were kind of like they were almost like a big boy, but they were a little bit different, but I can't remember what they were. And they were just so good. They were like some of the best tomatoes I ever ate, but they weren't big boy. They were something else like it.
That's something I didn't write down on our my update. I did clone a tomato.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a little baby, like grape tomatoes that were orange and they're super, super sweet and really prolific. But that also was a hybrid that I had bought. So I was like, I really want to keep this going. So I took cuttings of it and it's rooted like crazy. And I'm going to plant that this weekend in a pot. And try to keep it going. We'll see what happens. It'll probably be a failure, but I like to do those kind of experiments. You never know till you
try. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know what I'm looking up right now? Can you clone a hybrid pepper plant?
I wonder, can you?
I'm Googling tomatoes it actually.
So easily.
And
so with,
yeah, it looks easily. Like you can.
Really?
Maybe that would be a way to preserve this pepper plant that you really like. Maybe take a cutting off of it and try to clone it.
I mean, I think everybody's had this where your tomato, if you trellis your tomatoes, you don't notice it as much. But if you've let a tomato fall to the ground, you know, they'll grow roots where they hit the ground. And they're super easy to clone. And that's really, you just cut a piece off. You can either put it in dirt. I put mine in water and they, within a week and a half, the roots were there.
Yeah, you might have to look into that. I mean, just a quick Google search. It showed a couple on there. It says you can. I bet it ain't near. I'm sure it isn't near as simple as a tomato. But boy, if it would be a way to preserve this pepper plant that you really like, and you know, get it start it small again and have it ready to start producing come like a late spring, maybe that'd be really cool.
Yeah, because what I did look into for overwintering them was you take them out of the ground, you take all the soil off, you plant them back in a pot with new soil just to avoid having the bugs and stuff come inside. And then you cut them back and you let them go dormant. And then in the spring you start them back up again.
But I bet with the cutting, you would want to like get it in a windowsill and do the whole,
I'm gonna try to actually grow it. I might try both with that plant.
Be interesting. Yeah. Maybe that's an idea. Have to keep us updated on that for sure.
So what about you?
Well, lots of good things and bad things have happened since we last talked. Something just happened. I'm going to go ahead and put this out there right now. Just last night, the carnage is still out in the cages. Yes. I haven't even cleaned it up yet. Right before this podcast, I went out to the quail aviary and I just started here a few weeks ago. I guess it's been a couple months ago now. I talked about how my jumbo quail had gotten kind of mixed in and they were ended up with tuxedos and everything else. So I didn't have any really pure jumbo quail anymore. So I had hatched just some jumbo quail and I was wanting to kind of restart my flock from just jumbo quail. Cause you just get a little bit more meat and you know, whatnot out of the jumbo. And, so I'd had them in the tractor for a while. And then anyway, I had put them in the cages in the aviary. So they're in the aviary in the cages. And well, it appears that last night a raccoon got in there and couldn't get to the whole quail, but he could certainly get to their heads as he pulled all their heads off. And I have one quail, jumbo quail, out of three cages of quail, jumbo quail. I have one quail left.
Raccoons are the worst too, because they're smart and they can get into everything.
Yeah. So like I said, I seen that, you know, 15 minutes before we were starting this podcast. So I haven't even cleaned up the carnage yet. So since we're over with that, I have to go clean that up. It's a shame. They just started laying too, which I didn't even get a chance to really save any eggs to rehatch. So, yeah, there's that. And, yeah, so I've set a live. I actually already did. I set a live trap in there, and then I'm gonna go clamp the carnage because I'm gonna try to catch this thing in there. If he's getting in there, maybe because I have rabbits on the other side, you know, across from the quail, and he didn't seem to bother them, but I'm sure they were a little freaked out, probably, by the sounds. But so there's a loss. I'll go ahead and share my other loss. I had a pump failure in the greenhouse, and I wasn't paying attention. In the aquaponics system for about 3 or 4 days. It wasn't a pump failure. It was a failure of design on my part. Okay. The power to my greenhouse runs. I have a double light switch kind of that runs the light to it supplies the power to my garage, and then I can turn the power off on the garage or the back porch light. Well, I've got it wired to the back porch light that goes to the greenhouse, but there's a switch in the house. Well, somebody turned the switch off. We leave them on all the time, but somebody had bumped it down. Could have been me. Could have been anybody in the family. I don't know, but it got bumped down and I didn't pay attention for like 3 days, 4 days. Of course, nothing circulating, nothing's, you know, so every fish died in my aquaponics system. And I had some really large goldfish in there. Probably like 6 inches long. I mean, some pretty good sized goldfish. And so they're all dead. So we're starting over with that.
Oh, man.
Two big failures.
Cleaning up to do. You're going to have some nice compost.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I cleaned all that up. That actually happened a couple weeks ago, and I already cleaned all that up. But yeah, so starting over with that, I should be harvesting I'll be harvesting the which I'm kind of excited about. It looks like they're getting really close. They're starting to fade a little bit. The water chestnuts.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward to harvesting those because I think they're getting pretty close. They've looked great. They're thick and grow really tall in there, and but yeah, they're starting to kind of fade. So I think it's getting close to harvest time for those. Right. I know they won't do good in cold weather. So as the weather starts to drop and temperatures, I'll go ahead and pull those out and see what the harvest is. I can't wait to see what that looks like.
Right.
And I was, you know, I have a CDL, driver's license, so I have to get a physical occasionally, right, for that, to keep that. And my blood pressure has been going up, and I knew it was going up. And that's a big issue for a CDL, I guess, when you're taking a physical. It's just a big issue. It's always something I have to watch. And I've been on blood pressure medicine in the past. I don't like being on blood pressure medicine because I weaned off of it and I did pretty well with it. But it seems like when I start getting close to a physical, I start checking my blood pressure a lot because, you know, I know it's coming up. Well, it was pretty high. It was getting high again. So I thought, well, what am I going to do? So I started eating more appropriately for a blood pressure diet. Well, what you want to do is, of course, lower sodium and increase potassium. That's will lower blood pressure for most people. So, I mean, so it's like everybody thinks about bananas when it comes to potassium, right? I mean, it's just what everybody knows as being this high potassium thing. Well, I got to looking, and like chard is like double what bananas are on potassium content. And I have a whole bed of chard out here. So I started eating like chard in everything. I'm putting chard in my eggs. I'm eating a cup of chard here. I'm every meal, I'm just like a cup of chard in everything. Right. And my blood pressure was down to normal within a week and maintained there for another week.
That's so awesome. I mean, yeah. And I was just all the time, how food is medicine.
Yeah. It was amazing. Awesome. Cause I've never really went after the chard like that, you know, and just like I said, within a week, it was down to normal. And I went in there, got my physical, and perfect. It was just great. And I was like, that's amazing. I mean, just a couple weeks of eating chard. And I don't, you know, I'm not going to claim that for everybody or even always for me, but
yeah,
it seemed to work extremely well for me. And so, you know, I think as a person who kind of struggles with blood pressure a little bit, chard is just going to have to become a regular part of my diet. I'm going to at least try to maybe get a cup a day, you know, of chard in some form in at least one of my meals.
It's yummy anyways.
Yeah, I like it. It's great. Yeah, just sauteing it. It's really good. Did some like grilled chicken with it and sauteed it. And it was like a great meal by itself right there. You know, just a couple cups of chard and some chicken. And I was putting, like I said, in eggs and all kinds of things. And yeah, it made a huge difference. I added some soups too, which makes me think it's been a great time to break out the old squash soup. You know, the butternut squash has been coming on and stuff like that. So I've been making some soups. Been adding, that's my favorite. But I even had been eating some yellow squash soup, the summer squash. I'd canned quite a bit of that.
How is that going?
It wasn't bad. It's not as good as, to me, taste wise, it isn't as good as butternut. Right. I just love that flavor of the butternut squash. But it was good. And I did add some stuff to it. I put some garlic and some I don't know. I put a few different things in there. I'm trying to think what else I put in there, but I added a few things to it and then gave it some good flavor because it's just not near as flavorful as the butternut. But it was good and it worked out pretty well. So I'll definitely be doing that in the future because I'd never done that before, canned it. But it was nice. And it was just super easy too because I already had it, you know, cubed up. I just dropped it in a blender, pureed it, throwed it in a pan, heated it up, added the few things I wanted to add to it. And, you know, within like 20 minutes, I had a nice big bowl of soup. So it was super easy to do. I liked that. So just some wins there and some losses.
That's one of the things I love about canning is it just makes for fast food.
It is. Once it's, you do the hard work early and it kind of stinks because you have these months, a couple months there where you're just slaving in the kitchen, but then, you know, the rest of the time it makes for some really quick meals and it's really nice that way. So you're right. It does make it easy. So folks, that's what homesteading's about though. We got our wins and we got our losses and you take them in stride both. Cause you know, there's going to be both, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
I did have some losses here in last few days, even today, and
big ones.
Those were big because now I'm gonna have to start over with the jumbos. I don't even know how he got in there because I had a possum get in there one time, then didn't kill anything. I just saw him in there and I fixed that spot. So evidently I've got another spot now where they're getting into that. We still dig under a fence and get in there. There's fence around it, so they probably dug under somewhere.
They're So smart.
Well, it's a fenced in area with a roof, and then you have, they're in the cages inside that. So it's kind of like this double security, right? But yeah, them quail are just kind of dumb. They get next to the edge of the cage, and then that coon just reaches in there and grabs them by their head, and he can't get the whole quail out, but he'll sure take their heads off. What a waste, isn't it?
Yes, man.
I guess we can get on with our happy topic now. We'll talk about apple harvesting, processing, and preserving. And like I said, that's been a big part of your life lately. Less mine. We've done some. I've made some, and we'll get into it later. It's been a little bit of applesauce and a little bit of apple butter for me, but we'll get into that. Apple jelly too. I have made some jelly.
I have not tried that. That's
oh really? That's one of my favorites.
We're not actually jelly eaters. So,
but see, I like apple jelly better than grape jelly personally. My kids the family seems to like the grape jelly better, but I actually like the apple jelly better.
Interesting. Yeah. We just don't eat a lot of jelly. So
yeah, well, it's high sugar content. So yeah, it's, even if you're making a lower sugar jelly, still a lot of sugar in jelly.
It is for sure.
So yeah, I don't eat a lot of it, but I do like it when I like it, mm-hmm. you know? But yeah, let's just jump right into it with the apple harvesting process. Cause, there's a little bit to that, and it's different for everybody in different parts of the country, different kinds of trees even. So let's talk about that. Best times to harvest.
Well, and it's probably different too. If you have a lot of them, then, you know, if you're a small homesteader like us, you're not going to probably invest in all the equipment.
Right. So what's it like for you? Let's just jump into
For us, it's just we get a ladder out and we start picking. It's really, it's pretty.
No fancy tools, just a ladder, and you get up there as high as you can, huh?
A ladder and a bucket, and we just start picking. I have tried to keep my dwarf trees, even though they're dwarf, they will get big. Not as big as a regular apple, but I have one right now that we let, it's a little bit too big. I think it's about 8 to 10 feet tall, which makes it hard since I'm short. It makes it hard to pick. So I'm going to prune it back this year and make it a little bit. So I try to keep my apples a little bit shorter. Even the old one out back that's looks like it's a big one. I don't think it's a dwarf or anything. I think it was too old for that. But I do try to keep it lower to the ground. Yeah, I think of like, I'm sure a lot of people have seen it. I think of the way Paul does his trees in the Back to Eden method where he tries to keep them lower.
Yeah, they'll spread out more, but low.
Yeah. So I'm trying to keep my trees just shorter, just so they're easier to harvest, because I don't have the equipment and it's just easier to use a ladder that way.
When I first put my three in, they are semi-dwarf, and I did a really poor job of keeping them low. I didn't even prune them the first few years. And now it's kind of like the way they've kind of grown, it'd be difficult to get them to sprawl and stay lower.
Yeah.
So I just kind of let them go at this point. And even as semi-dwarfs, it's amazing how tall they are. I have one that's probably 30 feet tall and it's a semi-dwarf.
Well, they still get
huge. It's huge. Yeah. And I don't know. I never expected it to get quite that big. I think on the tag when I bought it, I remember, and it would say like the height, and it would say like 12 to 18 feet or something like that. And it's like 30 feet tall. So, yeah, and like I said, my peach trees my pear trees are the same way. They were semi-dwarf, and them things, I mean, they were taller than my house until I did that massive pruning last year. So,
So I don't know how I decide when they're ready is, you know, when they pick off easy, and that's mm-hmm. what I've read. I mean, you can damage the tree if you pull them off.
Yeah.
So when they come off easy, and for our trees, it seems to be, we have one tree that always ripens quicker than the other ones. It just depends on the variety of apple. And, but our back tree, the one that does a lot of apples, usually is about right now. They taste good. We'll pull one off and eat it. That's usually a pretty good indication.
I noticed that like mine seems to like the one I get the most apples from, it seems like it has a variation on ripening times for the apples on it. Like it'll start dropping apples before like half of them are even close to being ripe. And so I'll start like picking some then. It's like, I'll have to kind of spread it out over like maybe a month of picking apples off that tree, which is weird. It's like, I really can't just go in there and harvest the tree.
Right, huh?
The early ones are, It's like I'll get some a little earlier. The other two aren't like that, but they don't give me as apples either. But that one, for some reason, kind of spreads out over about, I'd say, a good 4 weeks probably of harvesting. Because like there'll be some. They'll start dropping, and I'll pick them up off the ground. They're ripe, and then I'll see a few other ripe ones. I'll grab them. This is pretty early, and right now we just kind of finished it about a week ago, And okay. And there's the final ones that were ripe. It's kind of strange how they're doing that. I don't understand that tree, really. Drop, that's the only one.
I've read that the dropping can be that the tree had too many apples. So it's
I don't thin. I'm bad about thinning my apples.
I don't
apples.
Thin either. And I think it kind of will. It's thinning itself because we have a lot of apples on the ground underneath this tree that dropped maybe over a month ago. And we've just kind of, I need to clean them up though, because I do have some issues with codly moth. So I need to make sure I clean those up. So I don't keep that.
I'm convinced, especially after I had that podcast episode of a couple weeks ago with Susan Poisner and the orchard people.
We
talked even before and after the podcast a little bit, and I'm really convinced now that I need to be thinning out my apples.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. It's just like, it's one more thing. And
yeah, it is.
And when your trees are that tall, it's kind of hard
to
thin them. Yeah. So I don't know. For tools, I do make sure that I don't, and that's not for me. I know that cherries, you shake them. I don't know if they shake apple trees. I don't think they do, because if once they bruise, they're not going to store.
I think they
I think
ladders and tools. And
Yeah. So I hand pick them. We're really careful when we do, just to not bruise them. If you want to keep a whole apple, you definitely want to be careful when you're picking.
Yeah. Well, because I have failed to keep my trees low, and the best apples seem to grow in the very tops of the trees. I do have a fruit picking tool that's
right,
I don't know.
You have that.
It's really long. I think the handle is 12 feet long. And then then my height, so I can get up there, 18 feet. 20 feet probably with my arm length. Yeah, I could probably get about 20 feet in the tree of that. And then if I have to, I can even get on a ladder and pick up a few more feet with that tool. And I can get up there pretty high in the tree. And that thing works really, really good. It's slow.
You
it's
get a
slow.
Shoulder workout too.
Yeah. But it's slow. It's not really heavy. It's just kind of amazing how light it is. Even that length, you think it have a little bit of weight to it, but it's really, really light aluminum. Yeah, that thing works really, really well, but it's a slow process because you're reaching up there and you're getting one or two apples with it, and then you're bringing it all the way down, dropping those to all the way back up. It really slows down the picking process. So it's quicker if you could, get your ladder, get all the ones you can reach with a ladder, and then get that out and kind of finish it off. But because it's a lot quicker by hand, obviously, than it is with that thing, because it is pretty slow, but it does work really, really well. And It for whatever reason, it seems like the better apples are always close to the top.
Yeah. I mean, that seems the way. I need to get a picking tool, because right now what's happening is we're just kind of leaving the top
ones. Yeah. I first bought it because my pear trees were so tall, and I was just couldn't get, it seemed like most of the pears were up there even, and I just couldn't reach them even with a ladder. So I got that, and then that made, we was able to get some really nice pear harvest. But yeah, for apples, it's worked out really well, because the pear trees obviously outgrew the apple trees for some reason. They grew way faster, even though I planted one of those apple trees a couple of years earlier. They're just not as tall as the pear trees get. But still, it works out good for those as well.
That's cool.
Yeah. Well, you got this big batch of apples now. What do you do with them? You're ready to process them right away, or you're not? If you're not, what are you doing?
Well, for me, I don't wash them, but I do wipe them off.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just depends on what you're going to use them for. I mean, I suppose you could wash them, but with a lot of things, that natural enzymes and stuff kind of protect them. And I have read that you shouldn't be washing them. And then if you want to store them long-term, you're going to have to find a way to keep them humid and cool.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hard unless you have a root cellar, which is on my want list.
and normally for you, it wouldn't be as difficult, because normally you're already starting to get a lot cooler where you're at too.
Yeah, but my garage is not attached. So anything that's in my garage is going to freeze.
Yeah, okay.
What my in-laws used to do was they had a root cellar, but when the root cellar got full, because they didn't have a big one, is they would line them along the garage wall of the house, and it wouldn't freeze, but it would still stay cold enough that it would keep the apples good for quite a while. And I wrap them in individual, like just some newspaper individually, just to keep them from getting beat up.
I was watching a video, and I can't remember who it was now. Actually, I can, but I won't mention his name. He had a root cellar, and he was keeping them in sawdust. Individually, kind of spacing them out in sawdust, and was eating apples that were like in, like early, like early in the year, like February.
Yeah.
That he'd picked the previous year, and they were, and every once in a while he'd pull one out and there'd be a bad one, but he'd just get rid of it. Cause you know, you don't want to keep a rotten apple.
No, you don't.
In there. Cause the, it off gases and it will make the other start rotting. And, so you want to get those out. So he'd just go down there every few days and search through and see if there was any rotten ones and then shove the rest back in the sawdust. And he did that for the whole winter and kept apples good in some sawdust all winter in a root cellar. Yeah. I was pretty amazed.
My in-laws kept theirs pretty for a long time, through most of the winter. And then of course, at the end of winter, when they start getting kind of mushy, that's when apple pies and stuff started getting made.
I've never tried to keep whole apples like that all winter. I just don't think it'd work out good. Well, for my situation, no root cellar. I mean, even with the basement, I just don't think it would hold up. It's a little bit of moisture issues down there. I don't think it would. I never tried to keep them long term. We'll keep a few for a few weeks, you know, in some bags or something, and just eat some fresh ones. But
yeah, we stopped trying because our basement is warm. It just never went well, and we just started preserving them.
But to be fair, my trees don't produce the best just eating apples anyway. They're better for making things out of. So I don't try to just save them as eating apples anyway, because they're just not great.
Yeah, same here, because I've been battling these diseases with.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we mostly process them, although we had a few really nice apples off of our small tree, which was rewarding, because I've been working for a couple of years trying to get rid of the disease that it has from the cedar trees, the rust. Mm-hmm. But having a couple of nice apples on there, it's like, yay, what we're doing is working.
We were out at our campground where we keep a camper at a campground. We went out there last week and stayed a couple nights, and we were on the golf cart running around the lake, and the previous owners of that campground, it has some new owners now, but they had planted a few apple trees in the back, and nobody ever touches these apple trees. They're just back there and nobody's doing anything with them. And we swung over there with the golf cart and we picked a couple, and I was like, these are some of the best apples I've ever eaten, because you know, the ones I got aren't great eating apples, and they don't spray. They don't do anything. These apples look perfect. Perfect.
Nice.
They had some that were green apples and they had some red apples, and I eat both, and they were some of the best apples I'd ever eaten. And they're like, the owners are like, pick all you want, get them out of there. They're just gonna fall to the ground, get in our way, and we're gonna mow them up and, you know, chew them up with a mower and everything anyway. Just go pick them. So I've got access to some trees now that have some great eating apples. So we're going out there and getting our eating apples out there.
Those will make some nice cider too.
Yeah, they would. I haven't tried that, but yeah, they would. And there's quite a few of them. I mean, there was a couple hundred apples on them trees to pick. So we picked a few and brought a few home, but we're going to go back out and get the rest, I think, if nobody else is eating them. So why not? Right.
Might as well. They're just going to rot.
Yeah. And they were delicious. I mean, I especially like the green ones. They were really good, really sweet. I was shocked. I'd never tasted a green apple that sweet.
So was it like a Granny Smith or something?
It must've been. Yeah. Huh. Just delicious.
Interesting. I wanted that's the one that I didn't plant, and somebody mentioned to me about Granny Smith apples, and I'm like, oh no, now I have to buy another tree.
They were great. They were fantastic. And you know, like, I have a lot of disease issues here, and I'm doing things and they're not being touched out there, and they looked perfect. These apples looked perfect. I was shocked. So yeah, I have an access to some good eating apples anyway. But yeah, for me, it's like, when I pick them, I really don't, for me, I do wash them and I get after them. Cause when I don't pick them until it's time to do something with them. So I'm picking them and taking them to the kitchen and just start the processing kind of right away. I don't even try to store them really. I pick them when the time is ready and I get after it. Cause it's like, I don't really have the room to be storing them up anyway. I haven't really tried really just storing them for any length of time.
Yeah, I might try and store some of them off of the big apple tree out back just to see. I don't know. But we, like I said, our basement's kind of warm, so I don't know. I don't think it would.
It is something I'm thinking about now. And I've talked recently about how I'd love to maybe this winter, maybe try to do some work on my basement to try to make it more of a root cellar setup. Cool. And yeah, apples would definitely be on the list of something I would love to keep down there, because I love apples. You know, everybody loves apples. Grandkids love apples. We love them. It'd be great if you could keep some apples pretty fresh tasting most of the winter. That'd be awesome.
That would be really nice.
Yeah. I would like to do that. So yeah, I mean, it is in the kind of wheelhouse of things I would like to take on at some point and make that happen.
Yeah. Somehow the store does it. So why can't we?
Well, yeah, they gas them and turn them red and do all kinds of crazy things
too early. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And that's why they never really taste as great as they do when you get them straight from an orchard or out of your backyard. Yeah.
That is so true.
We have a really popular orchard not far from our house here, and everybody goes there, and boy, they have delicious stuff, and they make all kinds of cool things from those apples. And we can talk about that as we jump into apple processing.
Yes. Yeah.
Because that's the part. It's some work, no doubt.
It is. I mean, it's just like everything. It's when you process food, it takes a long time.
Yeah. So you're picking them. You're not taking a lot of time, maybe when you're picking them, looking them over. You're just picking them, getting them all gathered up, getting into the kitchen. If you're like me anyway. And then I kind of do the sorting from there. I mean, if one's seriously rotten, it don't make it in that batch, but I'm not really, if I grab it and it's not mushy, it's going in the basket and I'm taking it to the kitchen and I'm going to do the further, sorting from there. So what are you looking for when you get yours in the kitchen?
Well, I'm looking for bruises, or right now I have codley moth and one of my trees, maybe actually two of them, but not the one out back, but they have like black spots, or there's, and they're mushy, some of them, but some of them look perfectly good. And then you cut them open and they're not. So I'm looking for holes and brown spots and stuff. And those are the ones that I'll cut up and turn into apple cider or applesauce, or I know some people wouldn't use those, but I do.
Oh, I think they'd work perfect for that too. I'm the same way on that. I even get the ones that they don't really have it's not a soft spot or anything. They just get this spot that's weird. It's just a dark spot, and the apple kind of pulls in almost like it's the end of the apples, almost like it divots in, and it just has a black spot right there. And I open them up and they look perfect within a half an inch past that, all the way around. You just cut that out right there, and then the rest of the apple's great. Exactly. And so they're great for about anything I want to use them for. They're just not just for setting and making an eating apple or whatever. You wouldn't want to store them. Yeah, they're just not a pretty apple, and they're not great for maybe storing for an eating apple, but they work great for everything else.
Yeah, they taste fine.
Yeah.
I have some of that too, and I forgot what it's called because I'm still new to being an orchard.
Yeah, I don't know what that's called, but I see that on a lot. I'd see that on a majority of my apples, actually.
Yeah, there's a name for it. Somebody told me, and I can't remember. I'm new to the whole orchard thing, and there's people out there that have been doing it forever. In fact, I have the Holistic Orchard book. I finally bought my own, so I don't have to keep checking it out from the library.
Yeah, there's so much stuff we both have to learn when it comes to certain things like this. Apples have been, everybody plants apple trees. It's like the first fruit tree you'll throw on your property in a lot of places, right? But it's like, then you start realizing it's one of the most difficult fruits to grow because of the disease issues and the pest issues and all the things. So it just takes some time to really learn how to, and also like me, and I learned on that recent podcast I did with Susan that I probably planted the wrong trees for my area. I didn't look for the ones that were more resistant to those type things. I just grabbed what the box store had and I put them in my yard, and they're producing apples, but they're probably not going to produce the best apples for me. And the ones that are going to be the biggest challenge. So you'll learn as you go. And anybody wants to know more about that kind of stuff, go check out that podcast episode and reach out to Susan because she knows more about that.
And there's books and there's groups on Facebook for, I think the one I'm in is a backyard apple growers or something like that. Yep.
And personally, as far for me, I feel like I get enough apples, for the things I want to do, though I have these three trees and a lot of it's going to waste. I mean, I say none of it's really waste because the worst case scenario is going to compost, but we'll even talk here in a few minutes about things you can do with the scraps beyond that. So I don't consider any of it waste really. I mean, there's enough. I have enough. So it's not like I'm trying to get, I would like to get better looking apples out of my tree, but that'd be my only real goal, I think.
Yeah. I would like to get some better looking ones just so that I can store them once we do have a fruit salad. Yeah. The only reason I planted that many apple trees out at our property is because our hopes are to feed some of those to pigs.
Yeah, there you go. If you got livestock that'll eat them, chickens will even eat them. I mean, things will eat them, and that's great. They are a food production, for livestock as well. Yep. for me, with the smaller livestock, it isn't, you know, something that.
Yeah, and I don't have that now either. So I'm the only consumer of it at this point.
You know, yeah, I have a lot less too of that livestock.
Yeah, you do. But I don't have any pigs right now.
Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, I mean, that when you're just cleaning them out, you'll find even the ones that aren't perfect, there are uses for them. So you can, yes, like I said, juice, cider, applesauce, you know, just, yeah, even things like jams and jellies and pie fillings. If you want to, if there is enough good on them, you can cut away the bad. You can use them for all these things.
It just takes a little more time. If you
have a little more work, a little more time. Right. Yeah.
You can still use it. You know, if you're making apple pie filling, obviously you want to have the nice parts of the apple. And
right. Yeah. Right. Absolutely. So there's still plenty uses for those though. But, so let's just talk about some of the things in processing. Let's say you're making juice. Let's just start with that. Do you make much apple juice?
I don't make a ton of apple juice. I have made it. We'll probably make some this year because until recently, our apples were producing every other year.
Mm-hmm.
And after reading, I found out that was because there was some deficiencies. So
yeah,
we've been feeding the soil around the apples really well, and now they're producing really well every year. So now we're like, oh boy, now
yeah,
I have enough to make juice, because it takes a lot of apples to make juice and cider. So
yeah,
I will be making some this year. Some people, I do not have one, but there are people that have steam juicers.
Mm-hmm.
Buy them like in the canning section. I guess they're pretty amazing. I do not have one. So what I have been using is I have a regular juicer for just, you can juice carrots, cucumbers, mm-hmm, whatever. So I have used that, and then you take the froth off. But I've also just used the old school method where you cut them up and boil it and
run it through some cheesecloth or whatever, yep, or something,
the old, get out the chunks. School and, yeah, method for doing a lot, because my juicer is not big,
and yeah,
it would be going for a long time if I just juiced apples and juiced apples.
Sure.
And juiced
apples, yeah,
through it. And I don't want to kill it.
I don't do the juicing. I do the cider. I make cider. It's a little less work,
yes,
to make cider, and I like it better because I like it thick. You know, I don't like.
Do you have a cider press?
No.
Okay. Yeah. We didn't. We made cider this year too. And you saw in the homestead, yep, front porch I put in our.
Yep.
Our wild,
yeah. How did you make yours without a press?
Okay. So we were given the opportunity to maybe borrow an antique press, but we were concerned we were going to break it. So we decided, I was thinking, well, what do we have that we can use? Well, we have a meat grinder.
Mm-hmm.
So I quartered the apples and we ran them through the meat grinder, which made them, you know, chipped them all up, which is what,
yeah,
the apple cider will do.
By the way, they make a special tool for that called a chopper that you, yes, drop them in and chop up the fruit chopper. Yeah. I'll put a link to one of those in the show notes. Yeah.
Yeah. They make those, but we didn't want to spend the money right now on
buying. Right. Yeah.
So then we took that and we put them in. My husband drilled holes in a 5-gallon bucket, mm-hmm, just tons of holes. And we used a laundry bag inside of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took that to the garage and he used a shop press that he has.
Awesome.
And a dumbbell.
There you go.
We have old iron dumbbells that I actually used to lift weights in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And we put that on the end of it and pushed it out. And we, out of a bushel of apples, we got 1¾ gallons. So,
yeah, the process I use is not even near as efficient as that. I have done a 5-gallon bucket with holes drilled in the bottom. And then I basically did the same thing with the apples, crushed them all up, put them in cloth, put a big old block of wood on top of that in the bucket. And then I jumped up and down on it until I forced juice out the bottom.
Hey,
and
I just let
it go. And it did work. I mean, I got, you know, but it was like what I got, you know, and I didn't get, it isn't as efficient because you're not going to squeeze them good, but I got quite a bit out and I had fun with it. And, you know, I was able to drink, you know, I probably made a gallon of cider over a few days, just messing around doing that and just playing around making cider. And it was delicious.
So last year we tried this, but we didn't use the meat grinder. We just used apples that are kind of mushy,
mm-hmm,
and it did not work as good. We broke the bucket.
Yeah.
With the, yeah, yeah. So this worked really, really well. And I think we'll do it again until we decide to spend the money on an actual Maybe we never will. Maybe, I don't know. It worked so well. I don't know if we need to. We've got, the thing is we have a very nice meat grinder, but I think you could have used even a hand meat grinder. It would just taken longer.
I actually did really almost turn mine into applesauce before I did that. I mean, I really crushed it up.
Yeah, this was pretty crushed. I don't know if you saw it in the video, but it was pretty crushed. We used the sausage blade on there.
Okay. Yeah.
And it crushed it up pretty good. It was pretty mushy.
Yeah. So you're still able to get it. It's easier to get it out of there. Where if you have a press, you don't, I mean, the chopper will chop a little bit bigger chunks, I think, but then you can, it does a way better job of squeezing that out of there. Those are nice.
That's what we use. I mean, you don't have to have one to just have some fun. It was fun and tasted yummy. It was amazing. And we're probably going to do a lot more this weekend.
Yeah. But if your goal is to make a lot of cider, get the proper tools, juicer cider, because get proper tools, because it will make it a lot easier and quicker. Yes. And you will get a lot. I mean, you can get a lot, but it takes a lot of work too to get it out of there if you don't have any of that stuff. So, but if you have a good press, and they make some cheaper ones, they're small and they'll make small batches, but they make bigger ones too. Like I think I put in the show notes, one's like a 3.5 gallon press.
That's pretty big.
And you can get quite a bit out. So I've watched, I have a friend that actually has one, and he makes cider, and he uses it and it works pretty good, you know, and he'll do several batches, crush it down, and works pretty good. They'll make a lot of cider with it, but you can do other things too. They'll make grape juice and you can squeeze out lots of things. I mean, it's not just apples.
You can use that press for all sorts of stuff.
Chopper too. You can use it to make things with the grapes and things like that too. So,
yeah, I don't have grapes, but it's kind of that season here for grapes. Yeah. And I've seen some for sale and I've thought about going and getting some, but it's not a grape podcast.
So, juicing and cider, you know, and both, like I said, they're common to make, but I don't make a lot of it because it's a little difficult.
It is. It's nice if you have tons and tons of apples and you don't know what to do with them. Right. It is a nice thing to do it. Because you can only eat so much applesauce.
I think I would make a lot more cider if I had the proper tools. Cause I do love cider. I love it.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people just freeze it. Yep. It does not taste the same after you can it. I've tried that. A lot of people
I froze it. Yeah. Actually, I've never froze any that I made, but I have froze some that I bought from we have, you know, like I said, we have our apple orchard here locally, and I've bought a bunch because, you know, we only have it for a short time. And so we'll buy some extra and then freeze it. Yeah. But, you can do that for sure. Drying is also something that I love. I do like dried apple chips, but now
they're a little addictive.
I will never love them as much as I love dried pear chips. They are my absolute favorite. I love those, but I do like dried apple chips and they're super easy. I mean, you literally just slice your apples, you know, peel, core, slice, throw them in your dehydrator. You can do it in an oven too. I can't remember, just the lowest setting. I think you even want to crack your oven doors open a little bit.
Yeah. Cause my oven, the lowest it goes is 170.
So yeah. And I think you have to crack crack the oven door open a little bit but you know, you can do that. I don't think that's as efficient obviously as a dehydrator, but if you got a dehydrator, solar dehydrator, even better. But if you have a regular dehydrator, make you a ton of apple chips. Cause you'll be surprised. You'll look like you made a bunch, but you will be surprised at how quickly they disappear after you've made them. They don't last very long.
I have been running I have two dehydrators and I've got one off of Marketplace. I got an Excalibur off of Marketplace.
Yeah, sweet.
But then I bought one too. And I've been running them nonstop for weeks with stuff.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, make lots and lots and lots of apple chips with every decent apple you have. But something that I find the easiest things to make are really applesauce, and even apple butter is not difficult. So, I make a lot of that and everybody likes it, a little bit of that, you know, I mean, it's something that's easy to can and store. Yep. So you can have lots of it on hand, and it's just, you want to use up a lot of apples, make a lot of applesauce and apple butter. I mean, you really can make a lot of it easy, especially the applesauce. It's just a little bit more time to make the apple butter, but you know, it's not much. How do you make your applesauces and apple butters?
Do you have any special tools? Butter, believe it or not, I've never made apple.
Really? Okay.
Well, like I said, we don't do a lot of jams and jellies. Okay. I've made a ton of applesauce, though. Tons of it. And
well, apple butter is just a little bit longer process than applesauce, really. I mean, I make it in a crock pot, and basically you're just boiling off the liquid slowly.
Yep.
Yeah, and until it's just really thick consistency. Yeah, basically that's it. You add a few little things like some, you don't even have to, but you can add like some vanilla extract and some other things to it to make it a little bit, change the flavors a little bit. And we'll do some of that. Yeah, throw in a crock pot, and it takes like 10, 12 hours in a crock pot.
Yeah.
And it's,
We have so much now. Before I was buying apples from the orchard. Mm-hmm. And it got expensive, so I would limit myself. But now that I have so many of my own, I might try.
Delicious. I love apple butter.
I'm experimenting with some other things, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah, but applesauce, so easy. Yeah, basically you just. I mean, do you have any special tools to make applesauce?
I just this year bought a special tool. I bought. I cannot remember what it's called, but it's basically one of those hand crank processors with the screen on it. It makes it a lot easier. I don't think you necessarily have to have it. You could probably, if you cord them and everything, you could probably just run them through a blender.
That's what I do. Do you have an apple, like the old crank cores, or what do you do to peel them?
I do have one, but you know what I've realized with those is you have to have a harder apple. If you get a softer apple, it just smooshes it.
Or if you just get one that's really crazy shaped too, like I said, they get the dents in them and stuff, it won't get to that. Great. It'll do most of the apple, but then you end up having to cut that part out anyway before you can really make use of it.
But if you want to make apple chips, those things are fantastic.
Yeah, quicker process. Yeah. I like them, and they're worth having one, and they're really cheap. They're $20, $20-something dollars, and it will make the process so much easier if you're doing certain things. So for me, it's with applesauce. It's literally just run it through that. And you know, I might have to cut out another spot or something. Yeah. And I do. I just slice. I'll like quarter the apple or something. Drop it in the blender and pack a blender full. Puree that thing pretty much, and then just pour it out.
Put it in your jar. Do you freeze yours? Yep. The first couple of years before I got into canning,
I've always canned it, which
it does taste good that way. But now
I've always canned it, so I don't know. I've never frozen it. I don't think.
But it's pretty easy. It's pretty easy to can too.
But it works great. And then we'll always make a few. You know, I don't make a lot of apple butter, but I'll do a couple, two or three jars, you know, quart jars of apple butter a year. And
it's one of those nice things. It's one of those foods that for me, I just go down and I grab it. Mm-hmm. I'll pack a lunch and just put a quart jar of apple, or not a quart, a pint jar
of
applesauce in my lunch. And it's just nice to have those fast, healthy meals.
Yeah, you can get some little containers or something if you're packing kids' lunches or things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just applesauce is a nice little thing to add in there. It's like I said, it's the easiest thing you can really do with apples. I think it's just the easiest thing.
It's easy.
And yet, you know, it's quickest thing, and it's something you can just use all the time. So, yeah.
I have now, made apple pie filling. Have you?
Yeah. Filling? No. We chop up and make apple pies with it, but no, not filling, not necessarily the filling.
Well, I've made the filling without thickening it, because you can't can it. So you basically add the apples in with all of the spices, and then you can it. And then when you take it out, you would thicken it with whatever, cornstarch or flour.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. I've done that just makes it quicker if I wanted to make, I don't do a lot of it because we don't eat a lot of sweets, but I usually try to keep a few jars.
Yeah. And we should mention, though, that applesauce, when baking, is a good replacement for a lot of products you're baking. You can use it in baking.
It is. You can replace it like with your oil and your butter.
One of my favorite things is like they make it that orchard is applesauce donuts. Ooh. Oh my gosh, they're so good. Great for you, but they are delicious. But yeah, a lot of people use applesauce in their baking products as a substitute for other things. And it is a healthier option if you're replacing some things for some people. But it's good too. Like I said, those applesauce donuts are delicious. So I wouldn't mind all my baked goods tasting something like that. I'd be fine with that.
Right. Yeah. it's apple and pumpkin season, and I'm all in.
Yeah, there you go. Now, when you're doing all of these things, juicing, cider making, drying, making applesauce, apple butter, whatever you're doing, stuff for the pie fillings, whatever, you're going to have a lot of scraps.
Mm, yes. Yeah.
So, and you got a couple of kinds of different kinds of scraps. You got scraps that are just bad stuff that you don't want to use. But then you also have the scraps that are good, right? You have your peelings that are nice. You have parts of the apple that aren't, you know, that aren't rotten, but they're not parts that went into this other stuff. There's things you can do with that.
Even the Even if even the core is decent. Like I have a few of my cores because of the issues I'm having that are black. I wouldn't use those. But if you have a good apple core, I've made apple scrap vinegar out of the peels and the cores. And that is fantastic for putting on salads and making, I've made mayonnaise out of it. It's just.
Now, what's the difference between apple scrap vinegar and apple cider vinegar?
So apple scrap vinegar is made from the scraps. Apple cider vinegar is actually made from the cider.
But it doesn't come out as the same product in the end.
It does not come out of the same product. So apple scrap vinegar will have less acidity, so which is why it's really good for, I mean, some people just drink it or add it to water to make, what is that? There's a drink. Is it Switchel or something like that?
Don't know. Would,
they add it to drinks. It's just less acidic. And then the apple cider vinegar, especially if it's raw, will grow a mother and it will actually, it'll have a lot higher pH. So, it'll
so the scrap vinegar will never grow a mother.
Mine did. I was really surprised.
Oh, it could. Okay.
It did. But yeah, it'll just never be that dark color. Mine's really.
So it just isn't the same thing. Because we see that occasionally on Facebook or somebody will say, make your own apple cider vinegar. And they'll be having a picture with like scraps. And that's actually apple scrap vinegar. It's not the same thing.
Which so we'll have lower acidity.
But it won't have the same applications for certain things because there's things you would use apple cider vinegar for that apple cider, apple scrap vinegar would not work as well.
There's certain recipes I have. So with gluten-free cooking, I mean, you don't cook gluten-free, but oftentimes a recipe will call for some acid, which is usually apple cider vinegar. They'll ask you to put vinegar in it. And it does something to the gluten-free. It does something chemically. So you would want to use that apple cider vinegar, which is higher in acid and not the scrap vinegar.
Okay.
But yeah, I have made scrap vinegar. This is my first year though, trying to make cider vinegar.
What do you use apple scrap vinegar for most commonly?
I've been using it just on salads.
Okay.
And I have been putting a little bit of it and I've been drinking a little bit of it just for digestion.
Okay. I bet that would make a good little, I bet that would, because I put some apple cider vinegar on salads occasionally and I like it, but it is a little strong. If you get a little too much of it, it's a little strong.
Yeah. It's like a watered down version.
Okay.
Yeah.
That might even be better then. Yeah.
It is. It's really good. And it's got a great flavor, but it's still vinegary. So this is my first year trying to make apple cider vinegar because I have so much cider. I mean, I have so much cider and so many apples. I thought, well, I'm going to try because I use a lot of apple cider vinegar and some of my, when I make coleslaw, my sauce has got apple cider vinegar. I tried apple scrap vinegar using that and it just wasn't the same flavor. You need that strong. We like it with the stronger flavor. So I'm going to try it. Hopefully it'll grow mother. I might add I have some Bragg's vinegar, which most people are pretty familiar with that brand, which has the mother in it. I might try. Apparently you can inoculate the cider vinegar once it gets past the point of fermentation that it needs it. So right now I have hard cider basically sitting in the kitchen. So it's still sweet, but it's got alcohol in it. So I need to let it ferment longer and get all that alcohol off and turn into vinegar.
Gotcha. Yeah.
It's a long process. I won't know if this worked for a couple of months still. I mean,
we look forward to the update.
I mean, the apple scrap vinegar took a long time and, but I was really happy with how it worked.
Yeah.
And I've done that several years now. But there's other things you can do with it too. The scraps I actually found, Mr. Google Pants was great. I found this website where they talked about 15 ways to use the apple peels and cores, and some of them I had never thought of.
Pectin is a common use also for apple peelings. A lot of pectins, mostly in the peeling, some in the core, but if you take the peelings, you can make your own pectin. Now it's a pretty, the process of making like a dried powdered pectin is a lot of processing to get it there. You know, I mean, you're cooking it down, you're drying it, you're, you know, and then you're grinding it. You're doing, I mean, it's a process, but it is a possibility also. Now, I have, when they're saying making jellies, just throw the peelings back in the boiling process when you're boiling out the juices, and I'll just throw the peelings in there, boil it, and then, you know, and then get the pectin kind of naturally. It won't make a strong of a pectin that way, I don't think.
No, it'll still, but it will thicken. Yeah, I think it helps too with part of those. That was part of my reasoning behind wanting the Granny Smith apple, because the green apples have more pectin.
I think it does better for making jams than it does jellies, to be honest, because
that would make sense.
Yeah, because I've made some jams and I went to make jellies and it turned out more like jam, and I was fine with it. I just left it like that and I was good, you know. I mean, I boiled it like forever and it seemed like that's as good as I could get it, and it was good enough. I mean, because I don't like just going crazy with the sugar. I mean, I obviously have to put some sugar in there, but I put the minimum amount. So even when I'm using like a store-bought pectin, I'll use like the low sugar pectin. Yep. So, you know, I have to put a minimum amount of sugar in there. And so if I've ever did it with the peelings, which I have a couple times, it worked out as like it didn't work out as jelly. It worked out as a jam though.
Right.
Which was fine. Yeah. So it's an option. So that, yeah, there are other things, but I find a lot of it does just end up in my compost.
Yeah. And I mean, if you have tons and tons of apple trees and you want to just make vinegar, I mean, vinegar is great for so many things. It doesn't have to be just for cooking. You could clean with it or whatever, but yeah. And your animal, a lot of people use it. A lot of people use apple cider vinegar to give to their animals. I know several people give it to their chicken, put a little bit of it in their chicken water. Mm-hmm. And
yeah. So, absolutely. Well, I do. Yeah. I do in the rabbits and the quail. I put a little bit of apple cider vinegar.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Why, if you have lots of apple trees, why not do it for your animals?
It's absolutely an option. I definitely need to be making the vinegar. I like to try to make the apple scrap vinegar, I think. I don't know if I got the patience to make the apple cider vinegar that you're going to take on, but definitely the scrap vinegar. How long do you let that go when you're making that?
I don't know if there was really, it's like all ferments. It just really depends on your kitchen taste, and the heat taste. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. And with the apple scrap, you do add sugar.
Okay.
There's not a lot of sugars in there like there is with the cider. So it just, you have to wait for that sugar to do its thing and go from alcohol to vinegar.
You know so much more about this stuff than me, because I don't experiment as much as you do in the kitchen.
And I don't, and I know, like, I don't feel like I know as much as other people, but I did just finish reading. Well, not quite. I have one more chapter to finish in The Art of Fermentation, which is a very thick book.
Mm-hmm.
I probably retained 10% of it.
Well, you have to read it. You only got to read 9 more times, then you'll have the whole book.
Yeah, it's a lot of meat there.
But. Well, let's jump into the preservation methods. Like, you make all this stuff and you obviously can't eat that much right away. So you're going to have to preserve it. So let's just talk about preserving some of these things we're making. And I guess for most of these things, the first thing we might think of is just canning. We done talked a little bit about that, you know, just having the applesauce on the shelves, grab it when you want it. Canning applesauce is really easy. It's, you know, really canning fruits. You water bath can it, or do you put it in the canner?
I do water bath can it. I usually add some acid to it though, like lemon juice.
Do you? Okay. Yeah. Is that the recommendation? Is that what it recommends?
I don't, off the top of my head, you're cornering me off the top of my head.
I'm like that with everything. I always have to refer back to notes or look back on stuff every time I can anything, because I can't never remember exactly.
Yeah.
You go months without doing it.
Yeah. I can't remember, because I haven't canned it since last year.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I know it's the recommendation. Usually fruits you don't have to, but especially like tomatoes now, the recommendation now with tomatoes is that you do. And you used to in the day, it used to be, they were just more acidic when they were more of an heirloom. Tomatoes and things were more acidic. But with a lot of fruits, you don't have to. You can just put them in and water bath can them.
Between the sugar and the acidity.
But what would help, you know, you're adding some lemon juice, and we can talk about that in a few minutes when it comes to dehydrating. But I would even say if you added it in the canning products, it could help prevent browning.
Yes,
because that's one of the treatments for when you're dehydrating apples to keep them from browning is to add lemon water. So you can do that. And I'm sure that would even help with that as well in the canning process. I don't think we do add. I mean, I don't add any. I haven't added any.
Okay.
And I do think it does get a little darker when you don't after some time. It will darken.
When I haven't, it is darker.
Yeah. It is darker, but I think it's safe.
I don't care, but I mean,
I think it's still safe. Yeah, I don't either. But anyway, yeah, probably a good idea. If I would follow the recommendations, whatever the recommendations are that Ball puts out, read it.
Get yourself a good cookbook, a good book that has the
Ball canning book will give you the right, tell you if it needs to be added in there or not. Add it if it says so.
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't remember. I should have looked it up because I just haven't canned it. And I don't even know if I canned it last year.
But you're also canning apple pie filling.
Yes.
So
I have.
We'll usually make a couple apple pies when it's fresh and I don't actually can any. I should. That sounds delicious. What would be better than January or February having a nice apple pie?
Because then you just eat it. But
okay. But you can your apple pie filling and just you're quartering up the apples probably and
Your jams and I slice them.
You slice yours pretty thin? Yeah.
Not pretty thin, like maybe an eighth.
Okay.
Yeah. We kind of like our apple pie a little bit chunkier.
Yeah.
Not the thin slices.
But of jams and jellies, obviously, I make jelly more than jam. And when it comes to apple, I just go ahead and make the jellies. I love it. It's one of my favorites. So we'll make that. I actually prefer even in the jellies. I like apple more than grape. So, you know, I'll definitely make a few jars of that. I'm about the only one that eats that, though, so I don't have to make too much. Four jars I'll make of that. It's easy. But you can that and it'll hold up all winter on you just fine and dandy. So you'll have some nice jelly to enjoy for a few months. Freezing. Do you do some freezing of apples?
I do not. We've never had a lot of freezer space because usually apple season is right about the time that deer season is.
Yeah.
And I'm hunting for space.
I have froze them because what I'll find was I'll go ahead and make like the chip size ones. And when I don't have the time to dehydrate them, because it takes a while to dehydrate a lot of apple chips. So I'll freeze some to dehydrate some more later. So they'll save for a while so I can get the dehydrator out later and freeze some. Again, you do want to do some kind of a treatment on them to keep them from browning before you freeze them. Which again, you can do a lemon water treatment, which you can put like a teaspoon of lemon juice with a cup of water and kind of spritz that all over your apples before you add them to the dehydrator or to the freezer. You can actually use salt water too. And I've never heard of it, but when I was doing a little bit of research about it, that I seen somebody who actually done an experiment and they tried three different methods and they did the salt water treatment, which they added a quarter teaspoon of salt to a cup of water and then put that on the apple, soak that on the apples and then froze them. They did the lemon water and then they did another method. What else did they do? I can't remember, but these two were really good. And the other one didn't come out good at all. But in their little experiment, they did the salt water treated ones actually did better at not browning than the lemon water.
And they didn't
taste
salty.
They didn't say that. This experiment was just talking about I would think a quarter teaspoon in a cup of water wouldn't be too bad, but they completely dissolved it and spread it. I wouldn't think it would add too much to the salt content, but anyway, they said it actually came out better, even had better results with it on the browning. So anyway, that's out there. I've never done it. So take that with that. But, I did see an experiment done on that and it had better results. A little bit better results. But I've done the lemon and that works. Yeah.
That's good to know. Well, I just looked it up and you do not need to add acid to it and you can pressure to applesauce, I should say, and you can water bath it or pressure can it.
Okay. Okay. I used to water bath it.
I can't remember that.
I used to water bath it, but then to me, it just got easier to just pressure can because the pressure canner's out. I have the electric pressure canner and it's just so much easier to throw it in that.
Sometimes it is. So. I mean, I do the same thing with some things. Sometimes I pressure can like tomatoes just because.
It seems like when I break out the water bath canner, the mess is twice as big. I don't know why. Right. It just got, seems like there's more stuff to wash, more stuff to, I don't know. It just seems like I make a bigger mess with the water bath canner than if I just, I also feel like it's more efficient, energy efficient to, you know, use the, my electric canner, especially. I think it's really efficient.
If you're small like me, you get that water bath canner full of water. It is it's heavy.
Yeah.
It's really heavy.
And then just, it takes so long to heat it up.
Hot water.
Yeah. Like I do it outside because I have one of them outside burners and I'll put it on that, one of them plate burners for outside and put it on that. But still takes, I mean, it takes a while to get it to the temperature. And then
it takes forever.
Yeah. And then basically you cool it down and you put in your next batch. You have to do all that over again. And it's like, it just seems like it's not very energy efficient to me to do water bath canning, but it's a lot of people feel safer doing it. And, you know, and it's definitely, it seems like it's an intro to canning. A lot of people prefer that, especially when you're new to canning, it just feels like the safer thing to do because you're doing stuff that isn't as dangerous to can as far as like, the, if it isn't done right.
You can find a used water bath canner on Marketplace for
they're nothing. Yeah. You can buy them brand new, really cheap, you know, Walmart and buy one.
It's a nice way to get into canning without.
It's a good introduction to canning.
Money
for sure. But, so you can do either. Okay. That's nice to know. But yeah. And the, and so I'm sure the jams and jellies are the same way. You can probably
and
do
that. That was from the Michigan State University website. So,
okay. Okay. So that's good to know.
Definitely going to be a safe website.
When I'm freezing apples, though, we were going back to freezing apples. I, you know, again, you get them to where you put something on them so they don't brown. I use lemon water. And then you'll want to, I spread them out on a tray and then freeze them and then bag them because otherwise they get stuck together in a big old glob and you can't get them separated. So freeze them kind of separately. Yeah, you want to do that with things like berries. I mean, everything.
Green beans, everything. Yes, otherwise, you end up with this big, huge clump.
It's an extra step. But it's worth it because you, like you said, you get the big clump when you're done and then you can just easier once it's time to cook with them. Dehydrating apples. Like I said, we love doing that. Apple chips, you know, I mean, we just make lots of apple chips and it, but it's a time consuming process. You know, you stick them in the jar and you can only make such a, so much of a batch at a time. Your dehydrator is running 24/7 all the time for weeks. That's why I said I freeze some to do some later because it's just such a big job. Now you put a couple things in there that I've never made in the dehydrating process. Talk about it.
Okay. So I have in there, apple sugar, which basically is really similar to how you make apple butter, but then you spread it out in your dehydrator and you dehydrate it and then you run it back through the blender. And a lot of people use that in like homemade granola and stuff like that.
Something tells me if you had a freeze dryer, that would even be way
easier. Oh, yeah, it would, but I don't. But yes, it would be nice. And a lot of people are use that. Like if you're trying to eat only natural sugars or only fruits and not add added like white sugar or cane sugar, you could use, a lot of people are using that in like homemade granola.
That just makes me think of something else though, too, that you could make that if you're, if I guess if you're going to make the apple sugar, it'd be similar because you'd be doing the spread out and that would be making the apple, like the fruit roll up type things. The
fruit leathers. Fruit leathers are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. You could do that.
Yeah. Those so maybe are that process. Also one of those things like apple chips where you make it and it disappears.
Yeah. That you, like, you couldn't make, you couldn't possibly make enough. There's not enough apples on your backyard to make enough.
Especially if you have kids around.
Yes, they love them. And it's super healthy snack, too. It's so much better than ones you'd buy at the store. They're going to be just loaded with way more sugar and preservatives and all kinds of things. To make them homemade would be so much better.
Yeah, and the other thing is, it is called apple molasses. So it's basically cider syrup. So you use the cider and you add some spices, or you don't have to add spices, and you boil it down till it's a syrup.
And
you know, same thing. You can use that like you would corn syrup or something.
Interesting.
I don't know why I keep thinking of this, but in like granola, maybe because I made granola the other day.
But if it was a cider, it would definitely have that cider taste then, wouldn't it? Yeah.
So it's just a way to, if you have tons and tons of apples or access to tons and tons of apples to.
Okay.
And it's also a way to get rid of things like regular sugar or regular high fructose corn syrup or something like that.
And if you want to, and you want to store your apple chips, you just put them in a jar and you can put one of the little, what's the things called? This little
moisture absorber
in there. Yeah. And it'll keep the moisture out of there, keep them dry, throw them up in the shelf. Like I said, I feel like you don't even have to worry about long-term storage with those, because it just ain't going to matter. They're not going to need to be there very long, but they will last a long time though.
Yeah. And I mean, you could put them in a jar and put vacuum seal the jar if you have a vacuum sealer.
Yeah.
And that will help with the moisture too.
Or you could vacuum seal them in bags even.
That too. Yeah.
Just cut the bags open when you're ready to eat them. You could absolutely do that too. It might even store better in certain situations. Depends on what your storage situation is.
Yeah. If you have kids, none of this is going to last for you.
None of this matters. So. It may not even make it into storage. You might just eat it all fresh and
I don't even have little kids around anymore, and none of this lasts very long.
Yeah, I have grandkids and they would tear this stuff up. I mean, it would just not last. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, so that's the process in that. Just these are the simple ways to make this harvest last.
We didn't talk
about
freeze drying. We didn't.
Yeah, you wouldn't even put that in the notes.
We don't have one.
We don't have one, but that's a whole other stage
of
preservation.
So much with a freeze dryer. There's
so much more when it comes to freeze drying.
Yeah.
You know, it's something I do have on my list. I'd love to have one day. They are expensive. Yeah. No doubt about it. But
expensive.
I have no doubt they're worth it, because I see so many people doing some cool things with them. And just the level of, you're just up in your preservation game big time with a freeze dryer.
Yeah.
And just the speed too. I mean, you're able to do things so much faster. Especially if your goal is to do a lot of dehydrating, freeze drying is so much better, so much quicker.
Well, and it retains, I believe, from what I understand, it retains more vitamins than anything
else.
Yes,
I've heard that too. So we're telling you about something we both want, but you might have it and you could tell us more about it. But I'd love to have one. I think you could do a lot with them that we're not doing. Yeah, for sure. And I'm always looking to tools that make it easier, quicker, and even the outcome better. And I think a freeze dryer is definitely one of those tools that could do that. Again, we already talked about the fermenting, the vinegar and scrap vinegar, but that's another way you can preserve this stuff, is to make your vinegar and your scrap vinegar from the apple. So it's just, all these are preservation methods also. I mean, they're uses, but they're preservation methods as well. So
yeah, and some of them are really old school methods that they, and some of them, I mean, I don't, maybe they probably dehydrated, just didn't use a dehydrator.
Yeah, probably just like a sun chip.
Yeah.
Like a sun chip
putting
thing.
It on a string or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's old ways of doing that, dehydrating fruits that we don't really do anymore because we got easier ways. But yeah, I mean, I said this was going to be the year I built a solar dehydrator, and then things happened where I never got around to it again. So one of these days, I'm telling you, one of these days, I'm going to build a nice solar dehydrator, one of them really big ones that'll hold tons and tons of stuff, because I wear my electric dehydrator out every year because,
oh man,
I love dehydrating, but man, that thing's on for weeks.
Oh yeah. Mine's been on for weeks too. And my husband was like, do you really need two? When I went to pick up the second one off of Marketplace. And I'm like, oh yes. And I have had them full. I mean, I've been doing my greens, drying my greens, and I've been drying chicory flowers. And right now I have tomato. I didn't know what else to do. I have so many tomatoes and I'm like, I'm just going to dry some and make it into powders. And apparently somebody shared a recipe with me where you use the tomato powder and you add it to cream cheese with some garlic powder. And apparently it's amazing dip. And I'm like, okay, that's what we're making with this. So it's been full for a long time.
I keep the dehydrator out on the table under a gazebo with an extension cord running to it, because like, I don't even want the thing in the house, cause you know, it's producing some heat, you know, and I can out there too. I got the canner out there. Somebody could just walk up in my yard and steal my stuff, cause it's all sitting on the table in the gazebo. Cause I just keep it out there. I don't want that stuff in the kitchen producing heat. Cause
well,
it's
now
just,
you've told everybody.
Yeah, I know. It'll probably happen now, but anyway,
yeah,
your own risk.
I have mine in the basement because I don't have anywhere. We don't have a porch with a roof over it. And I didn't want it to overheat in the summer. So that's a wish list for me. It is
all my equipment's been sitting out there for 2 months longer than that. Probably it's been sitting out there running, cause I was even doing some stuff earlier. Yeah. So anyway, that's it. I mean, you know, when it just comes to harvesting and processing and preserving apples, it's not overcomplicated. You don't have to make all these things. You can choose a couple of these things that you really like. The bottom line is make the things you like. and experiment with some things you don't know if you don't like, and try them and see if you like them. And apples are pretty easy to work with and pretty safe to work with. And, you know, I mean, delicious. And, you know, if you don't have apple trees, go to an orchard and buy some apples and try some of these things. And then maybe it'll help you determine if you want some apples on your actual property.
Yeah,
you know?
I think if you're, I don't know if they grow apples in the South, but at least from the middle of the country up, I would think that there's probably orchards somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, even if I lived in the South, I'm sure I would try to get my hands on some apples from the North, and, you know, they're in the stores and stuff. And I would try to make some of these things myself. Cause just when you process things yourself, the processing procedure just contains less of the things you don't want. It's just a fact. You know, if you're making your own apple butter and your own jellies and your own pie fillings and your own applesauce, there's going to be things in the store-bought things that you probably don't want. But if you make yourself, they're not going to be in there. You know?
And if you don't have an apple tree and you live in a small spot, you and I are both, you have three, I have three, but you can have apples and a lot of them on a smaller piece of property. And you just have to have a couple of years to get to that point, but you can, I mean, growing apples in a small area, you can do it. Yep.
Yeah. And even maybe there's orchards where you do it. Like, you pick orchards where you can go and pick your own apples. And there's lots of apple. Like I just told you about the campground. Nobody's doing anything with those apples. Apple trees grow everywhere. I mean,
I see them alongside the road all the time with loaded full of apples.
Game reserve where I go hunting, there's apple trees in there, just dropping apples on the ground. You know, you got to beat the deer to them. But
one of our orchards, and I don't know if yours does this, would sell drops.
Mm-hmm.
And
probably
bags.
I've never tried, but yeah, I could see that.
Huge bags. I used to buy those and make applesauce out of those. They weren't the best apples because they had fallen to the ground, but they were really affordable. Yeah. And that's what I would use for applesauce when the kids were young.
There's lots of options out there. So even if you don't have the trees on your property or don't even plan on it, there's a lot of options out there, but they're worth having on your property too. But listen to that episode I did with Susan about picking the right trees and doing the right thing with them, because you can get the wrong kinds of trees for your area and ones that aren't maybe even the best trees for what you want to do with them. So
episode before I planted all my apple trees.
Yeah, I know. I told her I was about 3 years late, 4 years late on some of my trees on that episode. So we talk about all the fruit trees, and I planted most of them in the last 3 or 4 years. So, but I have the couple apple trees I have, I think about 6 years ago, I planted the one apple tree. So it's got some age on it already, and it's producing a lot of apples. I mean, I don't thin, and the branches get so heavy, they're just almost laying on the ground. I mean, it's bad.
That's what I have with my big apple tree right now.
So I really should be thinning, and I will next year, because just things she convinced me of, just like production on the quality of the apples, and it'll help with like disease issues. It helps with so many things. But I'm like, you know what? I need to be thinning that tree out.
Yep.
Anyway.
And then fertilizing mine made a huge difference.
For sure. Well, I feel like this is an episode maybe that won't, you know, affect everybody, pertain to every person, every one of our listeners, but I think a little majority of homesteaders. And so I hope folks got something out of it. And, you know, it's kind of a limited topic. Sometimes we spread them out a little bit bigger than this and try to cover a more broad range. This is pretty specific to apple harvesting only, but it's something we both deal with. And it's something that gets, if you got a couple trees, it's a big part of the process, you know, when you're doing your processing things, apples take up some time. I mean, I think of two things when I think of processing, and it's apples and tomatoes, you know, because those things seem to take up a lot of our time. And, but they're both really worth putting the time into to get your product that'll, you'll be able to use for a few months, and you can make multiple things out of both of those things. So that's great. We wanted to do an episode on that.
I mean, and you've already said it, but long before I ever grew either apples or tomatoes or in quantity, I was calling farmers and buying by the bushel.
Yeah.
And you can do that. In an apartment and do that.
Yep. And it's worth having the stuff to process them and make your own stuff. It'll be healthier. It'll be fun, and it'll be a lot cheaper. Even you can put a lot, you buy a couple bushel of apples, you can put a few jars on your, in your shelves for sure of some things. And there's some definite product there you can make. And like I said, using the scraps even and making more stuff. I mean, you can just make an abundance of things from a couple bushel of apples. It's amazing. So
it is.
Jump after it. And yeah, I hope some folks got something out of this, or at least got inspired to get out there and start picking those apples and not just letting them fall to the ground.
Yes.
Well, folks, I think that's all we have for you on this episode. And until next time, happy homesteading. God bless.
And grow where you're planted.